last day together. So I'll say some words about practice in daily lives. Concentration provides the stability and stillness in the mind for mindfulness to be applied skillfully. Both concentration and mindfulness are needed in meditation and in mindfulness in daily life. They support each other. Concentration reminds you to be mindful. On retreat, because of the hours we spend in formal meditation, the mind has a chance to get more settled and concentrated. But concentration's a little bit like lifting weights. If you stop lifting weights for a couple of months, after a while, you go back to where you started. So one of the most helpful things in developing and maintaining our concentration is daily practice. If you don't have a regular daily practice, I strongly encourage you to make a commitment to it and find ways to support it. I'll mention a few of the things that that tend to be helpful. It can be helpful to sit in the same place at the same time each day. To take the time to really reflect what's going to work in your life. It starts using the power of conditioning. You know, many people, you know, they get up and they automatically go brush their teeth because they've conditioned themselves to it. So you set it up so at the same trigger, the same time of day, this is the sitting time. You just don't think about it. You just go do it. So the power of conditioning can really help. But we all have different lives. You know, some of us have young children. There's all sorts of situations. And I know some people have developed a very regular practice by meditating at work every day. And the work schedule is actually supportive with the regularity. And it was a welcome, a refreshing break for work. Another thing that's helpful is sitting with others, having friends who practice. When I taught an online course some years back, I was really struck by a couple of friends. They lived in different states, and every morning they'd call each other and say, "Okay, I'm sitting now. Me too." And that was enough for both of them, and they kept their practice up for years. I know quite a few of you. If we were in a circle, I'd ask for a show of hands, but many of you sit with Gil's 7 a.m. Global Sangha, so it might be a different time for you. So all those things are really supportive. Another thing that for me has been supportive over the years is taking time to periodically reflect on our deepest intentions. To remember that in whatever way we might understand it, that all our accomplishments in life, all our to-do lists, everything we do are not meaningful if the heart isn't at peace. And some way of connecting with our heartfelt wishes to be free, to be at peace, and not taking it for granted. You know, over the many years of decades of practice I've had, I've gone through plenty of periods of getting complacent. You know, I'd sit, but I'd sit with not really full-heartedly, you know, and then I'd reconnect my purpose for sitting, and it would revitalize my practice. you know, daily sitting naturally helps us be mindful during the day. It tends to create a momentum of mindfulness. In the same way, when we're mindful in daily life, it actually strengthens our formal sitting practice. We don't have far to arrive. It's not like we've been in two different worlds and we sit down, but it's closer. It's what I like to call a virtuous cycle. It supports a sense of ease in our lives. in developing a daily life practice, a formal daily life practice, I decided to, it was recommended by my teacher to just pick one activity to be mindful of each day and to committing to it for a month. So I chose brushing my teeth. So I'd brush my teeth. I was doing it twice a day, you know, and 2 minutes each. So it's a 4 minute commitment every day. And you can treat it like a formal meditation period. You stay mindful of what's moving, what's making contact. It's actually a really good concentration practice. Can you be present for the entire 2 minutes? Can you feel the details of the bristles contacting the gum line, one tooth at a time? And then maybe a month later, you add another activity. You know, I pick things that are short, like, you know, shampooing my hair or washing dishes. And gradually over the month after month, you know, building on that, becoming mindful during more and more activities. And the more activities that I incorporated, the more mindfulness just kind of spread into the rest of my life. Some of us have very busy lives, and it's even more helpful to be mindful in daily life when we're busy. It doesn't make our day busier, but actually adds a feeling of spaciousness to it, of being relaxed instead of rushing from one thing to another. And these are a few other things that have been particularly helpful for me. After one retreat, I was spending a lot of time at the computer, you know, which is, you know, it was work related, but it was like very long days, you know, and I made a commitment to integrate walking meditation into my day. And the way I did that is that every time I got up from sitting, from a chair, from the kitchen table, from my car, I'd stand up, completely disengage from what I was doing mentally and connect with my feet on the ground and mindfully walk to wherever I was going next. Not necessarily, not slowly in particular, just in my body. And sometimes it was just 10 steps to the bathroom or to another room to get a drink of water. Other times walking to and from the car, to and from the house. And some people make it a point to park a little further from wherever they're going and to take that time to mindfully walk. So that by the time you arrive, you'll likely be much more present and centered. So for many, another thing that I incorporated is for many years, my work entailed spending hours a day responding to email. And I would, after a retreat, I would come home and look at my email and I'd work on it and get completely exhausted. And so I began the practice of smiling with each email. And I would take a moment to mentally connect with the person I was writing, whether I knew them or not. And really connect. And, you know, this is another human being just like me wanting to be happy. And then I'd take a moment to smile. And it actually took no more time to go through my emails. And I was a lot happier doing it. So I recommend that or some version of that. Excuse me. Another thing that I found really, really supportive in daily life is transforming waiting into mindfulness practice. All those moments, standing in line, waiting on hold, stuck in gridlock, so much time to practice. You know, meditators don't have to wait. So we get a chance to practice. Or as Matthew said, maybe that's the concert. And the last thing I want to mention is that it doesn't take much to really show up. It takes one breath, and we can show up and be here. We don't have to do a whole anything. It doesn't have to be so formal, but one breath of attention. And the little acronym that I used for many, many years is BRO, like a brother who's always with you. Breathe, relax, and open to what's in front of us. And just if you take a moment just now, just connect with it. Just take a deep breath and relax in your body. You can get a relaxation response and just open to what's next. And we can just do that, sprinkle that throughout our day, anytime. I learned by doing that to not underestimate the power of one moment of mindfulness. Like the Buddha said, with dripping drops of water, the water jug is filled. So I'm going to pass it on to Matthew for some of his maybe things that have been helpful for him. So thank you.
Thanks, Inez. How are you guys doing? There is a I'm going to invite actually reactions. There are a lot of options. If you click on the three dots, there's like a wide range of facial expressions, and just attune to yourself. Okay, seeing. Okay. Nice. Okay. It's helpful. So, we'll open it for questions in a moment. Two things came to mind as hearing what you're saying, Inez. There's maybe one mindfulness bell that is more important than all the others. It's called dukkha. Yeah. Like in a certain way, what we care about more than mindfulness is suffering. You know, like we care about mindfulness in large part because it's in service of the reduction of suffering. And so part of what I feel happens is that dukkha, suffering, our own, others, reminds us of the Dharma more and more. And then we just follow that in some way. And how this looks, it's you know, it's complicated. And but the kind of willingness, the basic willingness, is the key ingredient, you know, to learn, to grow, to be softened. And yeah, I feel like we have to find our own intrinsic motivation, you know, like truly, like, and maybe curiosity or something like that is foremost in that. It's like, we practice can't go on forever if we feel like it's an obligation to someone, something, some goal, you know? So we have to like find our own intrinsic motivation. We have to find what's alive in this, or what does like elicit like genuine curiosity or a certain kind of agenda-less learning, you know? It's like a certain kind of, yeah, willingness that doesn't have an agenda. And then as that happens, then life really does become practice, you know? And there is a sense of, yeah, we have to keep our life together. We have to take care. But in a certain way, we are, freed up to really, rather than life being about getting, it's about learning. And that's a real phase shift that serves us in practice. So let me pause. There's still questions maybe left over from last night or from whatever's going on with your hearts and minds, but open to you folks if you wish to raise a hand, and Inez and I can try to respond to anything.